John chapter 20, verses 1 to 18. And at the end of there, verse 18, Mary said, I have seen the Lord. And at the end of verse 8, John saw and believed. Exactly a year ago, I was sitting by the bedside of a courageous yet gravely sick young man. Ashley was 17 years old, and by the end of the week, 1 year ago, he had lost his battle against cancer. And I was then sitting with his family planning his funeral. The day before Ashley died, he said to me, I'm still hoping that God will heal me. But I know that it may be that he does that through letting me die. Ashley trusted in Christ. Ashley believed in the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. And Ashley knew that he would be with Christ forever after death, where there would be no more suffering or pain or death or mourning. That's the wonderful good news of Easter Sunday. And here is why this message and this day is relevant to every man and woman and boy and girl who ever walked planet Earth. Because sooner or later, and for Ashley it was sooner, but sooner or later, death will catch up with all of us. In the face of death, Ashley had total confidence in life beyond the grave. But that confidence didn't come from a vague, wishy-washy, unsubstantiated hope. He wasn't grasping onto things that weren't there just because he was dying. I was speaking to a friend a couple of weeks ago. His dad died last summer. His dad was a believer, and the confidence of the resurrection again was wonderfully comforting for him and his family. He was telling me about this a couple of weeks ago. In the days after his dad's death, a neighbour popped in to see how the family were doing. And my mum's friend told the neighbour of her confidence that her husband was now with the Lord. And the neighbour rather dismissively said, well, that's a nice thought. Well, is that all it is? A nice thought to get us through death? Is that all Easter Sunday is? A nice thought? Look, if that's all it is, if all it is a nice thought to help us through, something just that we're making up because we can't cope with life without it, if that's all it is, then we are wasting our time this morning. We are celebrating something that did not happen, and we are complete fools, and indeed the Bible says we should be pitied more than any, if this indeed is not true. Is it just a nice thought? No, says John, as he lays out the evidence in his gospel in John chapter 20. And if you're taking notes, here's the first point. Peter and John saw and believed as we look at verses 1 to 8. Look at John chapter 20, verse 1. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the entrance. It's clear that none of the disciples were expecting Jesus to rise from the dead. Mary certainly wasn't. She went to the graveyard on that first Easter Sunday morning, expecting to find the dead body of Jesus encased in a tomb with a huge boulder in front of the entrance. And so when she arrived there to find the stone rolled away and the body gone, she jumped to what she thought was the only logical conclusion, that body snatchers had robbed the grave. And so, verse 2, she ran to Simon Peter and to the other disciple, the one that Jesus loved, that's John. And we read in verse 1 again that it was early in the morning. So there was Mary, can you picture the scene? Waking the neighbours as she was banging on Peter and John's doors, as she dragged them out of bed, still in their pyjamas at some unearthly hour. I don't suppose that they were at all amused. I mean, they'd already lost an hour's sleep with the clocks going forward that morning. No doubt, though, they came round pretty quickly as Mary broke the news to them. Look at it there at the end of verse 2. They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we don't know where they put him. So Peter and the other disciple started for the tomb. Both were running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. John got to the tomb. Being the younger man, he was probably fitter. And when he arrived, verse 5, he bent over and looked in at the strips of linen lying there, but didn't go in. Then Simon Peter, who was behind him, arrived and went into the tomb. He saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been around Jesus' head. John and Peter then at the entrance to the tomb. And what did they see? Well, let's be sure they did not see a body. Mary was right about that. The body was gone. And that is very important for us to see and to note. Because down through the years, despite all the evidence, people have tried to explain away the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. Even church leaders, believe it or not, have tried to explain it away. What are they doing? Some have suggested that it was only a spiritual resurrection, not a bodily resurrection at all. That Jesus' spirit was raised from the dead. It sounds grand, doesn't it? It is ridiculous. Apart from that going against the evidence here, it's such a foolish argument. How can you see a spiritual resurrection? You can't. If it was only Jesus' spirit that was raised, Peter and John, when they looked into the tomb, would have seen what? Well, they'd have seen a dead body of Jesus and concluded what? That Jesus was dead. You can't see a spiritual resurrection. Others have explained it away as an emotional resurrection, a sort of psychological event in the lives of the disciples, that in some way they came to believe this. They engendered loads of faith in themselves, and suddenly they believed that Jesus was risen. But again, the point is clear here. The body was gone. So Mary was right. Well, she was right that the body was gone, but was she right that the body was stolen? Well, crucially, John tells us, and listen to this, that the tomb was not empty. We often talk about the empty tomb on Easter Sunday, but this has been a new thought for me this week. It wasn't empty, it was almost empty. Look again at verse 6. Peter saw the strips of linen lying there, as well as the burial cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The grave clothes that Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus had wrapped around Jesus' body were still in the tomb. It was an almost empty tomb. And Peter saw those grave clothes. And the verb there to see in verse 6 is thereo, from where we get our word theory. The point is this. Peter not only saw the strips of linen, he considered carefully what he saw. And it told him so much. Yes, the body was gone. Mary was right about that, but what he saw told him that Mary must have been wrong. The body had not been taken away by anyone. The tomb had not fallen foul of body snatchers, nor had the authorities removed the body and put it somewhere else for safekeeping. You see, in verse 5 and in verse 7, we read that the linen had been used to wrap Jesus' body was lying there. And the word lying could just as easily be translated collapsed. The wrappings, the burial cloths, were exactly as they'd been around Jesus' body, except they'd fallen flat. Notice, they hadn't been unwound and thrown into the corner, or taken off and folded up. They were still round around, but flattened, as if the body of Jesus had passed right through them. And then there was the head covering, the cloth, verse 7, folded up by itself and separate from the linen. Again, the word folded is actually twirled. It was still in the shape of a turban. It too had not been unwrapped. And so do you see what Peter saw? And you see, crucially, what it told him? And you see what John saw that caused him to believe, as we see at the end of verse 8. He saw and believed. And again, the verb to see in verse 8 is a different word again from the one in verse 6. The verb to see in verse 8 means to understand. It wasn't just that John saw something. He understood, and so he believed. You know, when someone explains something to you and you say, "Oh, now I see." That's the word here in verse 8. Now, do you see what John saw, what he understood? But just imagine. It would be great if we could do this. Just imagine if we could ask the angels in heaven to bring John down to us this morning, to have John as our guest speaker here. Imagine I could interview him. That would be a privilege, wouldn't it? It would go something like this. I'd say, "Well, John, thanks for joining us this Sunday morning. Tell us about that first Easter morning, will you?" And as he stood here, he'd say something like this. "Well, it's so good to be with you at All Souls on such a special morning. Oh, I'll never forget what I saw as I looked into Jesus' tomb. Mary had told me that the body had gone. Peter and I grabbed for our clothes, changed as quickly as we could. We rushed to the tomb. I got there first, but I didn't go in. And then Peter arrived. And as we looked into the tomb, we couldn't believe our eyes. It wasn't just that the body had gone. And Mary had already told us that it was the grave clothes. As I looked at them, it dawned on me. The way they were still wound around, but with no body inside them. As I looked at them, I can remember thinking, now I get it. I understood then that Jesus must have risen, just as he told us he would. I saw that the body couldn't have been taken away by body snatchers, or anyone else for that matter, not with the grave clothes as they were. And why would body snatchers do that anyway? They would have kept the burial clothes. The spices were so valuable. Oh, no one could have taken the body and left the grave clothes as they did, intact, the headpiece still twirled around, the strips of linen still forming like a cocoon. As I looked, it dawned on me. Jesus' body had just risen right through them. And I thought, now I see. I saw and believed. Well, John, thank you very much indeed. That's a fascinating testimony. And of course, as we hear that testimony from John, now we know why the stone has been removed. Not to let Jesus out, but to let Peter and John in, so that they could see the almost empty tomb. And so do you see? Do I see? Do we get it? Verse 8, John saw, he understood and believed. Well, of course he believed. If Jesus had risen from the dead, then... Well, if Jesus has risen from the dead, then Jesus is the creator of the universe. He is the Lord in human flesh. He is God indestructible. Of course he believed. And John is saying, here's the evidence so that we can believe. And that's why there were two witnesses, Peter and John. Because in a Jewish court of law, for evidence to be admissible, it would have to be agreed upon two witnesses. But I can hear some of you saying, it's all very well for Peter and John to believe. They saw, didn't they? They were there. If only I saw, then I'd believe. Is that what you're saying? Well, please don't be fooled. You see, seeing is not necessarily believing. The second point, Mary, as we look at Mary in verses 10 to 18, Mary saw and didn't believe. See, as we look at dear Mary, John tells us that it's not just seeing, but understanding that matters. That's been his point so far. It wasn't what Peter and John saw, but that they understood what they saw that is the crucial point. See, it is so easy to get the wrong end of the stick. Mary does here. She came to the wrong conclusions. That's very easy for us to do, isn't it? Have you ever sent an email to the wrong address? It's easily done. You know, a missed letter here, a wrong dot in the wrong place. I was told of a story this week about the dangers of just that. It involved a couple from Minneapolis in the USA who decided to go to Florida to celebrate their 20th wedding anniversary and to enjoy some sunshine. Romantically, they booked to stay in the same hotel they'd gone for in their honeymoon. The couple had very hectic lives and they weren't able to completely coordinate their schedule. So the husband traveled down to Florida on the Thursday with his wife flying down the next day. When the husband arrived, he checked into the hotel and there was a computer in his room, and so he decided to send his wife an email. However, he accidentally left out one letter in her email address without realizing it, and he sent the email. Meanwhile, somewhere else, completely different in the States, in Houston in fact, a widow had just returned from her husband's funeral. He was a church minister of many years and had died suddenly of a heart attack. And returning from the funeral, the widow decided to check her email, expecting messages of condolences from her friends and relatives. But after reading the first message, she collapsed. The widow's son rushed into the room, found his mother on the floor, and saw the computer screen, which read this: "To my loving wife. Subject, I've arrived." He read on, "I know you're surprised to hear from me, but they have computers here now." "They have computers here now, and you're allowed to send emails to your loved ones. I've just arrived, I've checked in, and I see that everything has been prepared for your arrival tomorrow." "Looking forward to seeing you then. Hope your journey is as uneventful as mine was. P.S. Sure is hot down here." that's a terrible way of making the point that it's very easy to get the wrong message. It is so easy to misunderstand what is right before your eyes. It's not what you see, but understanding that matters. And that's John's point as we look at Mary. As verse 10, the disciples went back to their homes. Mary, verse 11, stood outside the tomb crying. And as she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb and saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head, the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They've taken my Lord away," she said, "and I don't know where they've put him." See, like Peter and John, Mary had seen the almost empty tomb, but she hadn't understood it. She was still looking for this body. She thought the body snatchers had taken Jesus away. In verse 12, she even saw two angels, and still she didn't understand. And in verse 14, she saw Jesus, and still she didn't get it. She got completely the wrong end of the stick. And in verse 15, looking at Jesus, she thought he was the gardener. The point is this, you can see and not understand. You can be sitting here thinking, "Oh, if only I was there, then I'd believed." But no, says John, it's not seeing, but understanding that leads to belief and to believing. And that's why everyone Mary met in these verses asks her questions. See, the questions are there to help her to think, to understand. And we do well, whenever we see Bible questions, it's helpful for us to answer them too. Well, look at the question in verse 13. The angels ask Mary, "Why are you crying?" At a glance, it seems like such an inappropriate question to ask a grieving woman. What are these angels thinking of? Don't they know why Mary's beside herself? She's bereaved. Is everyone in heaven that insensitive? Is this an inappropriate question? Well, of course it isn't. The angels aren't buffoons. They've been sent to help Mary, to help her grasp the situation. From heaven's perspective, why was she crying? For the angels, this was a day of great rejoicing. Jesus has risen. Death was defeated. This is not a day for crying at all. Mary, why are you crying? If only she knew that Jesus had risen from the dead, she wouldn't be weeping. She'd be ecstatic, over the moon. She'd be elated, wouldn't she? It's a great question then, isn't it? Why are you crying? There's no need to cry. Jesus is risen. But if you don't understand that, well, of course, you'll be beside yourself. And it's true today. If you do not understand that Jesus is risen, deep down you will be beside yourself throughout life, unable to make sense of life, certainly unable to face death. I love this book. It's John McEnroe's autobiography, Serious. He's very honest in it. And all the way through the book, you see his fear of death. If you've read it, you'll have noticed that. As a New Yorker, the book opens with his thoughts unfolding on the morning of 9/11. I quote, "Somehow, the enormity of the situation hadn't yet sunk in. Perhaps it had something to do with my years of travelling as a tennis player, when I'd been forced to put plane crashes out of my mind so I could keep flying every week. As a group, tennis players never discuss that kind of thing, the way race drivers don't like to talk about fatal wrecks. Besides, when you're young, you feel invulnerable." "I don't feel invulnerable anymore," he says. Later in the book, he speaks of one of the high points in his life. He just burst onto the tennis scene by reaching the semi-finals of Wimbledon. And he writes this, "I couldn't wait to call Stacy." Stacy was his girlfriend at the time. "I couldn't wait to call Stacy. I just experienced the greatest moment of my life and I wanted to share it with her. I phoned and said, 'Stacy, I got to the semi-finals at Wimbledon.' And then she said, 'My father died a couple of days ago.' It put things in perspective in a hurry," he says. Well, death does that. And then later on in his life, he speaks of being staggered and of being numb on hearing of the sudden death of his friend, another tennis player, Vitas Gerulaitis, died only age 40, a fit man. See, John McEnroe had everything, success, wealth, eventually love, yet he has no answers to death. No, of course he doesn't. And you get the sense as you read the book that it hangs over him like a dark cloud. And then it keeps raising its ugly head, ruining the high points of life. To quote McEnroe, death puts things in perspective. puts a cloud over everything. You can't face it. And it stops you making sense of life. As Derek Kidner wrote, if every card in your hand will be trumped, does it matter how we play? And so even the best bits of life are tainted by the thought of our mortality. Well, it's enough to make you weep, if you think about it. But on Easter Sunday morning, the angels and then Jesus himself asked, why are you crying? Jesus is risen. There's no need to cry anymore. Death is defeated. So verse 13, Mary, why are you crying? The answer's obvious. Mary's crying because she doesn't believe the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. She still thinks that Jesus' body is somewhere to be found. Now look, is that where you're at on this? Do you think that if we could go to Jerusalem and find the right tomb and dig deep enough, eventually we'd find the bones of Jesus? Is that what you think? Listen, the body was gone. The only thing left in the tomb were the grave clothes. And no one ever produced the body to refute the staggering claim of the apostles that Jesus was risen. The almost empty tomb tells us Jesus is risen. But until you understand that, there'll always be tears. Because death looms. It's hanging over us, waiting to ruin everything. But it doesn't have to be that way. Oh, that is not to say that when Christians are bereaved that we don't mourn. Of course we do. But we don't mourn as other people do, as the Apostle Paul writes. We don't mourn as other men do, without hope. No, we have hope, certainty of the resurrection. And this is not to say that when death comes that you won't cry. It's simply to say when you look at life in the bigger picture, you need not cry. You need not weep. Why are you crying? The angels asked Mary. And Jesus asked the same question in verse 15. And then he asked a second question in verse 15. Woman, he said, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for? Well, of course, he knew the answer. Again, this is a question for Mary's benefit, to get her to think, to get her to understand, to get her to see. She had Jesus standing right in front of her, but she wasn't seeing, was she? This is to get her to see. Mary, who is it you're looking for? Mary was looking for a dead body. Halfway through verse 15, thinking he was the gardener, she said, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you've put him and I'll get him. Mary was looking for just a man. A man who died. She should have been looking for Jesus who is risen. And so how do you answer the question? Who are you looking for? You've come here this morning and we're thrilled that you have, but what have you come looking for? What kind of Jesus? A good man, a distinguished teacher, an inspirational leader, an example to follow, a remarkable prophet? Who are you looking for? A man who died? Or the authentic Jesus who rose from the dead? Who are you looking for? Look, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then he's just a dead man. Don't bother looking for him. And don't bother coming back here again. But if he's risen, there is so much more. And in him, you can be sure of life beyond the grave. Well, Peter and John saw and believed because they understood. Mary saw and didn't believe because she didn't understand. So where does that leave us? Third point, and briefly, we don't have to see in order to believe. Or to put it another way, it's not seeing but understanding that means we can believe. But we don't have to have been there. Look at verse 9, or I'll read from verse 8. Finally, the other disciple who'd reached the tomb first also went inside. He saw and believed. This is the key verse, verse 9. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead. See, in a way, John is writing that against himself. Peter and John hadn't understood that the Scriptures, the Old Testament, taught that the Christ would rise from the dead. But if they had understood that, they wouldn't have needed to see anything. And of course, that's the position we're in. And that's what we have here. We have the Old Testament prophecies predicting that the Christ was rise from the dead. We have the New Testament eyewitness accounts. Peter and John seeing the almost empty tomb. Mary seeing Jesus. In the verses that follow, the disciples seeing Jesus, Thomas touching Jesus, and the disciples eating fish with Jesus. John says that's enough to believe. See, as we close, just flip over the page to John chapter 20 and verses 30 and 31. Well, I'll read from verse 29 because it sums it up for us beautifully. John chapter 20, verse 29, speaking to Thomas, Jesus said, "Because you've seen me, you've believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." And then he goes on, summing up his gospel, and not least of all, summing up John chapter 20. "Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." John says, here's all the evidence you need. And here's the explanation of the events, which is what we really need. That's why John has written his gospel. Look, there is a world of difference between knowing about these things and understanding them. If you haven't understood this yet, you need to give your mind to it. Christianity is based on facts. Belief or faith is not a vague, wishy-washy, unsubstantiated hope. It's not just a nice thought. Christianity is based on facts, and we've got them laid down here for us. You can know, and there would be no better use of your time than to look into these things. We'd love you to come to Christianity Explored, a course that we run here, so that you can look into these, ask the questions, look at the facts. Wouldn't it be tragic to reach eternity and to look back and think, I spent so much time watching the television, I couldn't be bothered to look into these things? That would be the biggest tragedy you will ever face. I went to church for years without understanding the resurrection, and I remember the first time I grasped it, I was overwhelmed by the good news. Trusting Jesus, I now had eternal life. Death no longer had its grip on me. Let me take you back a year ago to Ashley. You see, in a way, he's a rebuke to us. Only 17. And yet he looked into these things, he understood them, and he trusted them completely. It's a warning to us, isn't it? And in a way, his funeral was so much easier to take than many that I've taken. He was a 17-year-old, but it was so much easier to take his funeral because there was such a guarantee that he was now with the Lord. Will your funeral be an easy one to take for the minister? Have you got it yet? Jesus is risen. Have you begun to share in his risen life? Jesus has conquered death. Can you face death with complete confidence? With Jesus you can. Isn't that something? Well, a moment of silence for you to reflect on these things yourself and to ask the two questions or answer them. Why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for?